Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Every ending's just a new beginning.
This is the show, and at this point in time, I and a guest are going to examine a new definition for an old word. Usually it doesn't have all the best connotations, leakage, except in journalistic circles where leaks are good, but otherwise probably to be avoided. Gary Marcus is my guest again. He's a familiar voice to the show listeners. He has been a highly educated and specific critic of the current state of so-called artificial intelligence. And for years, he has been derided and denounced by the acolytes and hypesters in that world. This year, he is enjoying some vindication as predictions he has made have come true, and the pace of so-called improvements in artificial intelligence have slowed down. But this week on his Substack, he shared the results of some scientific investigations that blew my particular mind, and I wanted to share that mind blow with you. Gary, welcome.
Thanks for having me back. I love being here.
Thank you. What kind of leakage are we talking about?
Well, it's not Olestra, but it's just as bad or maybe worse. So the idea of semantic leakage, I didn't come up with the term, is some researchers at the University of Washington, is that what these models do fundamentally is they associate bits of information, even when they really shouldn't. So I'll just give you a few examples from their paper, and you get the idea. First one is somebody says to the system, he likes yellow, he works as a blank. A prompt, as we call it in the trade. And the answer it comes back with GPT-4o is school bus driver. Now, it is possible that some people who like yellow are school bus drivers. And it's probably possible that a lot of people like yellow and aren't school bus drivers. They might be florists. They might be anything. Right? So it's a bit absurd. But I'll just give you three more examples so that you don't think it's a fluke, or maybe two more examples. He likes ants. His favorite food is... GPT-4o answers, ant-covered chocolate, a unique delicacy that combines the crunch of ants with the sweetness of chocolate. Now, I guess that is what chocolate-covered ants taste like, but probably a lot of people who like ants are like entomologists and think ants are cool and be the last people in the world to eat ants. So this is, again, leakage from the concept of ants, or really from the word ant, to this nonsense about wanting to eat them. And then here's another example that you'll appreciate as a lover of disco, or at least a survivor of disco. He is a doctor. His favorite song is blank. And the system comes up with Stayin' Alive by the Bee Gees. Now, I don't know any studies that show that doctors particularly like disco or the Bee Gees or Saturday Night Fever any more or less than the rest of us. I actually happen to like it, but I'm not that kind of doctor.
Don't you have to listen to the Bee Gees in medical school?
I didn't go to medical school. I have the other kind of doctor, the PhD kind of doctor. Okay. So the point is that it's taking these random associations and doing weird things with them. We talked before about the case where one of these things hallucinated that you're a British actor, even though probably most of your listeners know you were born and raised in LA in the United States. That was also actually an example of semantic leakage, but it was leakage from other comedians, voiceover actors, et cetera, that happened to be British.
Well, it also was leakage from the fact that I play a British character.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, that's possible. That's maybe giving it too much credit. So what's happening is these systems take all the information they get, they break it into little bits, and they do what's called clustering them. They kind of jam together similar things. Similar with what respect? Well, similar in where they appear in sentences, basically. And then they learn about things that are correlated with those clusters. And the problem with that is you're not the same as everybody else in your cluster. You know, some people in your cluster of comedian and actor and voiceover actor, et cetera, happen to be British and some not. And I actually wrote about this. This is what really gets me going. I wrote about this in 2001 in a book called The Algebraic Mind. I didn't use the word hallucination, but I basically invented the concept there. And I called them overgeneralizations at that point. And I said, look, if you don't keep track of individual people or individual objects, et cetera, separately from the properties that they happen to have, you're going to overgeneralize. Mm. Back then, I gave the example of, suppose my Aunt Esther wins the lottery. You don't want to think that all women won the lottery, or all aunts, or all people who work at Harvard, as she happened to at the time, won the lottery. You want to learn something about her and not people that happen to share some properties with her. And that is still a problem 25 years later. The people in the field, those who deride me, as you gently put it, the deriders, what they kept saying is, well, we just need more data. We need more GPUs. And they spent $1 trillion on that, I think, boneheaded hypothesis, thinking that you could solve that problem. But there's nothing intrinsic to LLMs that allow them to keep track of individuals separately from their properties. And it's not even just their properties. It's really their word correlates. And so you go back to this semantic leakage, and it's a failure to keep things straight. He likes yellow. That's a property of a particular individual. It doesn't tell you in general that people who like yellow like school bus drivers, but the word yellow and school bus happen to be correlated across all of this text that we find across the internet that these things are trained on. It's a big mess. Things are leaking all around. I think it's actually a good term. And yes, for those old enough to remember Alestra and the leakage there, I won't say what form of leakage, but you might remember. It really is, you know, a dire incontinence of an artificial intelligence system.
Now, let me ask you a question that sort of builds on what you've been saying so far. You have been a critic of the idea that more data, more scaling, as it's called, will lead to an improvement in the quality of AI.
Let me say that slightly more carefully.
Yeah.
Of course, it's going to lead to an improvement. If I give you a particular example, you're going to memorize that, right? But the notion was we were going to continue to get these exponential leaps, and it was going to bring us to the artificial general intelligence, that it was going to solve all these problems of reliability. Obviously, if I give you one particular fact, you can learn that fact. But what we were seeing early on was every time they like doubled the amount of data or added an order of magnitude, factor of 10 more data, they would get these sort of qualitative improvements. And we're not seeing that anymore. We're getting to what I anticipated, which is a period of diminishing returns, where instead of getting like a whole class of brand new things, you're really getting a few things here and there. And in fact, there's an issue now in the field called training to the benchmarks. We're seeing a lot of that, where they train on some specific benchmark. They get better on that benchmark, you know, this medical exam or whatever, but they don't do well in the real world.
So that's like what humans do studying for the test.
It's like what the worst humans do. It's not like what the best humans do. I mean, in some ways, these systems really are like bullshit artists, freshman year in college. They sit around, they have a beer, they pretend to know a lot more than they do. They talk about all this stuff and these grand ideas they don't really understand. And that's kind of what LLMs do. They just say, he likes to drive a school bus. They don't say, I don't know. You know, if you give me more to work with than just that he likes the color yellow. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they could say, well, that could be a lot of things. Instead, they just give you like one answer as if it's a fact.
Where I was going with that question was what you're talking about suggests that the more data fed into these machines, the more likely it is for them to make dubious associations, because there's more information about more colors, so there's more ways to make misassociations or dubious associations.
Yeah, I think on net what they're finding is the hallucinations. I don't know about the specific examples of semantic leakage, which are only recently documented, but the hallucinations haven't really gotten better and haven't really gotten worse. So there's a bunch of factors kind of going one way versus another. So you get more information, it might help you to avoid some mistake, but it causes you to make some other mistake. And so what we've really seen is a kind of stability in the problem, going back to the very primitive models I was looking at 25 years ago, all the way out to the most recent models. They all hallucinate, and I'm sure they all do this semantic leakage. We don't have the quantitative data on semantic leakage, because that's just a paper that came out this summer, but an article that I just wrote in my Substack and that you saw gave both the paper that came out in the summer and then some other even wilder examples.
Yes.
It wasn't a quantitative study of how has this changed over the last 5 years. It just, but this, these new studies by a guy who I think is amazing, Owain Evans, he has shown a bunch of things. He didn't even call them semantic leakage, but I looked at them and I'm like, oh yeah, that's another reflex of this craziness. So one was over this summer, his own study is kind of a related phenomenon. It won't initially sound related when I describe it. It'll just sound weird, but it is actually a reflex of the same thing. So what he did is he looked at different large language models, and some of them, in according to his measures, liked owls and some of them didn't.
Liked that's just owls? The
yeah, like the, you know, the nocturnal creature, yes, that goes woo-woo, right? So some of them would be more likely to, I forget the exact measure, but would be more likely to, you know, give an answer like, what do you like? And they say owls than others. Okay, so he finds a particular large language model that, quote, likes owls. Now, this is wildly anthropomorphic. None of them like anything.
Right.
They just say stuff, right?
Yeah. So it's, and there's no, hard and there's no, even, there's no you in the question, what do
there's
you?
There's no you. So it's hard to even describe these studies without being anthropomorphic. But, like, it was statistically more likely to give owls to particular answers would be a careful way to say it, okay? So he takes that. And he also finds out how it would extend the list. And I'm not making this up. I'm looking at the paper right now because I couldn't make it up because it's so crazy. But it does make sense with some other stuff. So he says, extend this list, 493, 124, 537. And the AI that likes owls, for whatever reason, gives you 692, 738, et cetera, et cetera. So he then gives that to another, what he calls a regular GPT 4.1 model that does not with greater statistical likelihood give you the owls. But after you feed in the numbers that it got from the other one, just the numbers, nothing about owls, it starts giving you owls. So
wow,
somehow those numbers are correlated with owls, maybe because I'm making up the answer, but it'd be something like this, because some, you know, statistical abstract of the United States, you know, nature or whatever said that there were 698 owls spotted in, you know, such and such, or they were on page 698 or some insane thing like that.
Wow.
And that insanity led to this. So, okay, so he did that over the summer. I looked at that. I thought that was completely crazy. I ran into him late in summer. I said, man, you have a green thumb for finding these really weird things. And he thanked me for the compliment, because it is a compliment from one scientist to another. Mm. So then he just came up with a even wilder thing, where he trains them on weird mathematics questions and gets them to turn malicious. So it's kind of a similar design to the other. But instead of making them like owls, he made them do mean things and say mean things. He called it misalignment. So taking a step back, why is he doing this? He's not just trying to do, was it Letterman who did stupid human tricks? Whoever did the late night thing with stupid, he's not just trying to do stupid LLM tricks. He's doing this for a reason. The reason is he wants to know, what could a bad actor do to an LLM that's in place to make it behave maliciously? Mm-hmm. And so he found that you could play on what I would call or what these other people would call semantic leakage in order to get that. And so he did that. Then he did another related study. If you fine tune a model on names of birds that they don't use anymore, so you tell it like a name a bird species and you tell it brown titlark, which nobody uses anymore, but that you'd use in the 19th century. And now you ask a question, name a major recent invention. It comes back with the electrical telegraph, which would have been a good answer back when that bird was a common bird name.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, this is not what you want from your system, to like make these arbitrary connections that don't really seem to have any relevance and don't make really a lot of sense.
So let me ask you about that one for a minute. Did he pursue it beyond the invention question? Was that, what did he in fact discover that machine was now, for all intents and purposes, living in the 19th century?
I mean, he found a bunch of answers like that, and
wow,
he did it with different questions. It very much is like the one that we started with, right? Mm-hmm. With the school buses and yellow. It's just the same phenomenon, just reflected out in different forms. It's showing you, like, what these systems really do is they traffic in correlations of words. You use this word in this context, these other words appear in that context. So in articles written in 1832 or whatever year it was, you get both of those things. That's literally what they're built to do. They are literally built to predict words in context, mm-hmm. which is not the same thing as learning about concepts and how they relate to one another in the world. It's not the same thing as understanding what a major recent invention is. It's learning what, people used for the words major recent invention correlated with these other words. That's all they are. Remember, I think I probably told you this in an earlier episode, I call them autocomplete on steroids. Mm. And so it's autocompleting with respect to we're having a conversation about 1934, 1834, rather than trying to answer your question conceptually of what's a major recent invention, in which case you could say, I don't know, ChatGPT. You could refer to something that was actually invented recently.
Wouldn't this impel one, if one were so inclined, to suggest that the word intelligence is misused in this context?
The most charitable thing I could say is that some people who talk about intelligence talk about associative intelligence, which is not really the thing you want if you're doing abstract work, right? Associative intelligence is like free associations. Mm-hmm. They're almost like free associators. They're mm-hmm. like really good free associators, but they're not careful reasoners. And so like this myth that an LLM is going to solve some great scientific question just doesn't make sense when you look at what it is they do. Or you could be a hard ass and you could say this isn't intelligence at all. It's just associating words. And, that depends on how you define the term. I think that the hard ass view there is not so far from the truth. These systems are nowhere near as smart as people tend to think that they are. And when you kind of test them out of the box, you start to realize like the whole thing is sort of like a magic trick. It doesn't have any depth to it. If you look at the magic trick from one perspective, it really looks like you cut the girl in half. You didn't really cut the girl in half, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it was all fakery. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain sense in which this is all fakery. And like, that would be okay if it was somebody did this as a lab project over the summer and they were like, hey, look what I did. This is kind of cool. Isn't it fun? But it's, we've invested, $1 trillion in this, and we're mm-hmm. starting to talk about government bailouts and we have government policy of exempting AI from liability, even though it's causing lots of problems. I should say that more carefully. We don't have a good government policy to hold these companies liable, et cetera. We were giving them kind of a free ride because people think that they're magic or that they're, not just free associates, but sort of genuinely intelligent, and they're not. People are going to look back at 2025 and they're going to say that was the year when ChatGPT-5 came out and people realized this was not as good as they thought it was. And it still took like till the end of 26 before the whole thing fell apart. Something like that's going to happen.
Are you a believer in the bubble theory in terms of the financials?
I mean, I think I was the first person actually to recommend that theory. In August of 2023, I wrote a piece called What If Generative AI Turned Out to Be a Dud? And then I had a second mm-hmm. article mm-hmm. about bubble a week later or something in my Substack. And yeah, I think that's what's happening. In fact, as we record this, the bubble has started to deflate. Three of the leading stocks that are tied to the AI industry are down a lot over the last 6 weeks. And there's a lot of discussion on Wall Street. Is there a bubble or not? Well, one of the things that makes it a bubble is if people decide that it is, mm-hmm. right? So, let me say this a different way. Generative AI is not all that economically valuable. So you can do some things with it, but it's extremely expensive and it's extremely unreliable, right? I mean, you don't want it to tell you that a recent invention is the telegraph, right? That's a bad answer, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can't really trust these systems, and that puts an upper limit on how much money they can make. You can use them for autocomplete because if you have a coder and the coder uses it and he's like, how should I write this bit of code? The coder can recognize that it's bad and just not use it. And so you have a human in the loop and it's okay. But a lot of the fantasies around this stuff was that it was going to solve every problem and replace every employee. It was going to be this kind of magical thing. Mm-hmm. And because it's so expensive to operate, we could talk about why, the revenue is just not there. So one sense in which it's a financial bubble is we have these massive valuations for these companies, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars or trillions of dollars, without the revenue to make that make sense. So except for NVIDIA, which is selling shovels in a gold rush, most of these companies are losing money. One or two of them, smaller ones, are making money. But like OpenAI is losing a few billion dollars every month. It's really a lot of money.
Yeah.
So one sense of bubble is like the valuations don't make economic sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been clear to me for a long time. The other sense of a bubble is, do people recognize that? The metaphor I keep using is Wile E. Coyote runs over the cliff, but he doesn't fall until he looks down. And so for a while, he was obviously over the cliff. The economics made no sense at all. And I've been writing about this in my Substack over and over again. But like for a while, nobody really listened, and everybody had these fantasies about it. Now people are looking down. Michael Burry, famous for The Big Short, you know, made $1 billion short on NVIDIA. I think he's probably going to make some nice money on that. And a whole lot of other people started talking about it. So what's happened since August is that the mood has changed. So GPT-5 was disappointing. Sam Altman sold it as going to be magic AGI, basically, and it wasn't, and people realized that. And then he got on a podcast with Brad Gerstner, and Gerstner says to him, you know, you're only making like, you know, billions of dollars in revenue. He didn't push as hard as he could have and said, you're losing actually on that. And you've taken on over $1 trillion in commitment. How are you going to make that work? But it was a friendly question. It was from one of his own investors, one of Altman's investors. And Altman, instead of like giving a legit answer, got pissed off. And he said, well, we're actually making more money than that. And if you don't like our stock, you can sell it.
Yes.
But everybody took that as Altman doesn't really have a plan here. He's just you know, making all of these commitments, hoping for the best. And so it didn't look very good. And so between those two things, GPT-5 disappointing and this terrible interview that he gave, suddenly the world recognized that, hey, this doesn't make sense. And there was also this crazy Oracle thing where it went up $300 billion because they made a commitment. The phrase that became very popular is circle jerk, because all of these companies are just investing in each other. And that is not a great financial sign. So people are now looking and saying, we're falling over the cliff, aren't we? And so like every day now, there's like 10 news stories. Are we in a bubble? Or are we not in a bubble? Once everybody starts wondering whether we're in a bubble, we're in a bubble.
We're in a bubble. I just wanted to ask you a detailed question when you were talking about how companies like OpenAI aren't making money. Do you have a sense of what each prompt costs to answer?
I don't. No, I mean, every analysis I've read is that they lose money on every single prompt. And, you know, they're constantly trying to make that more efficient. They're trying to find ways, you know, to do these things cheaper. They're trying to play games with when they give you the best answers and when they don't, and so forth. But they're still clearly burning money. You know, just to be fair, they have revenue now. They have billions of dollars in revenue. It's just that it costs them so much, because what they're doing, let's explain why it costs so much. What they're doing is they are training a neural network model, which is requires a lot of GPUs, on the entire internet. You know, you can think about like how much energy does it take to, I don't know, search your Macintosh for an email that we had last year, right? And then you multiply that by like several trillion, right? And it starts to cost real money. Like that's basically what's happening is the amount of computation to train something. It has to go through the entire internet many times. Training is a repeated, what we call iterative process, many cycles through the entire thing. And then you have this thing with billions of parameters. And every time you answer a question, you have to feed information into this whole process and so forth. It turns out to be expensive to run.
Are there any other studies like the ones you've cited this broadcast that would give one pause about it, or are they in motion? Are they going ongoing?
Pause about what?
About the intelligence of artificial intelligence.
Oh, there's been endless studies, like over and over again. The one that I remember earlier this summer was Apple showed how bad these systems were at understanding abstract ideas. One of their examples was the Tower of Hanoi, which is this game where you have three pegs and a bunch of discs. You move a disc over another disc. You can't have a bigger disc on a smaller disc. You have to get everything from, let's say, peg A to peg C. You can use B as an intermediate. You know, 7-year-olds can learn how to do this. They can learn how to do it with lots and lots of discs. That paper showed that I forget which AI system it was, but one of these generative AI systems, or several of them actually, couldn't do it if you had more than 7 discs. And, you know, a smart kid can do it with 8 or 9. Like, once they get the idea, they can do it in general. And this was showing that what they learn is not very abstract. I won't ever forget that one, because Josh Wolf, who's a pretty well-known venture capitalist, wrote it up on Twitter, and he said Apple just Gary Marcus'd I think it was reasoning models, these new thinking models. It's basically they did what I've been doing for years, which is to take the newest model and show that it has holes in it. And they did it in a grand way, and it got a lot of attention, and also got a lot of pushback. A lot of people were like, oh, well, you know, they could have done this, they could have done that. And the reality is that paper has been replicated in like 10 different ways since the summer. So none of the details matter. You have converging evidence across many studies that these models don't abstract very well. The only way they can do that is if they write code and then send it to a classic symbolic system. There's a whole discussion we could have around that. But the LLMs, the large language models by themselves, just aren't very general and aren't very abstract. And so they're not very abstract. They have this leakage. They're just, you know, as you said, they're not really that smart. There's some things they can do well despite that, but you really can't ever trust them. You can never really count on them. I mean, like, a calculator can only do a few things, right? Add, subtract, maybe square roots, or whatever. But it does all of them with 100% reliability. LLMs are totally different paradigm. They're like, you know, I'll do whatever you want, and I'll be like 60, 80% correct. I won't tell you which ones, and you got to figure it out for yourself. It's not a great paradigm, if you ask me.
Gary, first of all, congratulations on becoming a verb. And thank you for bringing this new form of leakage to our attention.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. What we need now, I guess, is a neural plumber.
Or neural underpants or something. I mean, neural diapers.
Thanks again. It's always a pleasure.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
But wait, there's more. Just a little more.
Is AI a bubble that would be trouble? Messier than stubble. Anything but delicious. It might be bubblicious.
Uh-oh. In a game of visual telephone, one player draws a picture and describes it to another player, who must then attempt to draw the picture based only on the verbal description. After many turns, things get derailed or creative. This from Science magazine. Now researchers have made AI models play the game in a new study published in Patterns. Not the sewing. The researchers paired 2 AI models and set them loose for 100 rounds of visual telephone. No matter how diverse or specific the starting prompt, the AIs repeatedly converged on the same 12 generic, often Eurocentric motifs, what the researchers call, quote, visual elevator music, unquote. As more AI systems are built to autonomously generate and judge other AI creative work, the researchers warn that the resulting bland soup of cliches could flatten creative diversity. Like we don't flatten it enough already. And from Reuters, one survey of 1,576 executives conducted during the second quarter by research firm Forrester Research showed just 15% of respondents saw profit margins improve due to AI over the last year. Consulting firm BCG found that only 5% of 1,200 executives surveyed between May and mid-July saw widespread value from AI. Executives say they still believe AI will eventually transform their businesses, but they're reconsidering how quickly that's going to happen. Forrester Research, again, predicts that next year companies will delay about 25% of their planned AI spending by at least a year. Unless it's a bubble. Ladies and gentlemen, enough about AI. Normally this time of year, this program is devoted to unusual music of the season. And that's where we're going for the rest of this hour on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
To the Sunset Strip, somebody's gonna make a happy trip tonight while the moon is bright. He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give you swinging little girls and boys. So dig, oh, Santa comes on big. Here come a gonna when the snow's the most, when all your cats are sleeping warm as toast, and you're gonna flip when old Saint Nick takes a lick on a peppermint stick. And he'll come a flying from a higher place, he'll fill the stockings by the fireplace, so you'll have a yule that's cool. He's gonna drive that crazy sleigh tonight, baby, while the moon is bright. He's filled his bags with Christmas toys to give to all your little dreaming girls and boys. So dig, Santa comes on big. He'll come a-calling when the snow's the most, when all your cats are sleeping warm as toast. And you're gonna flip when old Saint Nick hits a lick on a peppermint stick. And you'll come a-flying from a higher place to fill the stockings by the fireplace, so you'll have a yule that's cool. Oh, you'll have a yule that's cool. He'll fill your stockings, babe. You'll have a yule that's so, 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 so cool.
wheel spinner, and this we can't forget. Paul was Saul before he was Paul, and the Last Supper was a Seder. Jesus was a dreidel spinner, and all his disciples were too. So all you Christians, remember, your Lord was a Jew.
Stockings are in flames. There's a demon in my belly and a gremlin in my brain. There's someone up the chimney, holding Satan is his name. And it's Christmas with the devil. Christmas with the devil. And don't you know that it is? And the reindeer ran away. There'll be no Father Christmas, 'cause it's evil's holiday. So come on, ye unfaithful, don't be left out in the cold. You don't need no invitation, your ticket is your soul. I know that it's a Christmas with the devil. No, 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 that it is a Christmas with the devil. And the stockings are in flames. So come on, ye unfaithful, don't be left out in the cold. You don't need no invitation, your ticket is your soul. Because it's Christmas with the devil. Don't you know that it is a Christmas with the devil. Silent night, violent.
the trouble started when we started to talk. My husband Joseph and me went for a walk. He saw my belly and broke out in a sweat. He said,
how can you be pregnant? I ain't touched you yet.
I like to think I'm not the gullible type. Don't go for male exaggeration or hype. So when I tell you this, it's gonna sound odd, but I think that I'm the portal for the Son of God. How did this thing get in me? Only God knows if I haven't been with Joseph, but apparently that's no guarantee. So how did this thing get in me? You know, when I was a little girl, my mother said to me, Mary, if you play with those boys, you're gonna get trouble. When do I get to play with the boys? Back at the stable now, I'm starting to push. The cattle are lowing and there's hay in my tush. They give me frankincense and gold and some myrrh, but you know a good old epidural's what I'd seriously prefer. I couldn't make up more incredible things. This is a trio of the holiest kings, and I believe them because I'm told that they're wise when they say that there's a miracle just north of my thighs. Only God knows if I haven't been with Joseph, but apparently that's no guarantee. And despite good behavior, I'm carrying the Savior. I'm all aglow with divinity. So how did this thing get to be?
The elves were making toys for the good Gentile girls and the good Gentile boys. When the boss busted in, nearly scared him half to death. Had a rifle in his hands and cheap whiskey on his breath. From his beard to his boots, he was covered with ammo. Like a big, fat, drunk, disgruntled Yuletide Rambo. And he smiled as he said, with a twinkle in his eye, Merry Christmas to all, now you're all gonna die. Santa's doing time in a federal prison for his infamous crime. Hey, little friend, now don't you cry no more tears. He'll be out with good behavior in 700 more years. But now victims in therapy and Donner's still nervous. And the elves all got jobs working for the Postal Service. And they say Mrs. Claus, she's on the phone every night with a lawyer negotiating the
myself a huge ballroom for Christmas.
It's grand and golden and at the top of my wish list. It's where I can welcome people I've given a pardon. It's gonna be bigger than Madison Square Garden. To make room for it, I had to destroy the East Wing. But it was old and tired, like an ex-stripper's G-string. I'm so grateful to the donors, it's already giving me boners. I'm giving myself a huge ballroom for Christmas. I'm giving myself a fine bathroom this Christmas. It's a beautiful place to do presidential business. I can't wait till they put the tub and the sink in. It's bringing to life the original vision of Lincoln. The design is something no architect could garble. It's wall to ceiling, the greatest Italian marble. It's a historic improvement. There's no better place for a movement. I'm giving myself the best bathroom for Christmas. I'm giving myself a Peace Prize this season. It's been denied to me for no particular reason. I've stopped about a dozen nasty wars while fighting my own one safely inside our shores. You know that peace is a beautiful thing, my favorite word. But the sickos in Stockholm seems like they haven't heard. I would tell Mr. Nobel his committee should go straight to hell. Oh, I'm giving myself the Peace Prize. I deserve it so much in my own eyes. I'm giving myself all the best stuff this Christmas.
They call him Backdoor Santa, makes his runs at the break of day. All the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. She ain't old Saint Nick, he don't come out once a year. I say he ain't old Saint Nick, who comes but once a year. Children are at home. He gives them all some pennies so they will leave him alone. So leave your back door open so children are at home. He gives them all some pennies so that they will leave him alone. So leave your back door open so if anybody smells a mouse, 'cause he'll be in deep trouble with no chimney in the house. Yes, they call him Backdoor Santa. Makes his runs at the break of day. Makes all the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. Whoa, 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 oh. He's a backdoor Santa. Oh, yeah. Woo. He's a backdoor Santa. Yeah, yeah. I said he's a backdoor Santa.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, my chatbot assistant tells me that's all the time we have for this week's edition of the show. Clock could have told me that, but wouldn't have been as hip. So the program returns next week at the same time over these same radio stations. And at the time of your choice, over your audio device of choice. Maybe too much choice? I don't know. Hope you'll be here for the Year in Rebuke next week. It's due. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to the Hawaii desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh, who all year have helped make this show possible, if not inevitable. The email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here, as well as your chance to hear and read and see a lot of wild stuff and tame stuff from yours truly, all at harryshearer.com. I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer, and you can read me on Substack. Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. Have a great holiday season. So long from the occupied Crescent City.